I did get to see a giant. He was massive. He was kind of a light blue, white hair, and like kind of, I would say they were green, hazel, but blue at the same time, eye color. But he wasn't moving, he was just laying on the ground. And there was this reversed Tesla technology cage over him. He was just hovering over him. I mean, he wasn't moving, but you could see, I guess, his essence. They were drawing out his essence, his life, and whatever, instead of enhancing it. They were reverse engineering his soul away, or whatever giants have. And they told us, but it was very sad to see that because obviously that one's not here anymore. But I got to see one of those and it was devastating. But yeah, you can't get close to those particular type of angels, because you'll explode.
So tell us, how tall was this giant?
He was, I don't even know because he's laying down. I would say at least 20, 30 feet.
Wow, that's quite tall. And I mean,
Yeah.
was he thin? Was he robust?
No, very thin, very thin. Looked almost to the point of starvation. But again, I don't know how long he had been in that chamber. There was no chains or any restrictions on him. I don't know if they kept him drugged or what they did, but you could just see this, the light kind of energy coming, sucking out of him like water waves into this Tesla machine. So, I mean, you know what they're doing, but they sit there and they tell you these guys are evil and they're trying to kill you. But when they're laying there looking at you lifeless, it's
That's fascinating. So his life force was being drained out of him. So they were intending to kill him,
right.
but you know, this was some kind of experiment as well, seeing how well their technology used on these beings.
And I'm pretty sure they're using it on us.
Well, tell us about it.
So how they would do it, I don't know if you've ever been in a plane. If you look down at the structure of cities and stuff, it looks like, well, like your keyboard. You take that the wiring mechanisms out and it's got these different structures on it. So that's what cities are, is they're strategically placed in certain areas as an energy frequency. So your house is literally your, I guess, your matrix chamber. And if you have any kind of plugs or energy, if you pay an energy bill, they're literally retracting energy from you. And now that they have the smart eye robots, they can time when you're sleeping, when you're not. That's why they say don't sleep with your cell phone next to you, because those ones draw energy as well. And they kick on because they know your pattern. But yeah, your home, anything that has electricity is, it takes your energy and it knows who it's taking it from.
You're listening to Exopolitics Today with Dr. Michael Sala, your source for the uncensored truth regarding the human, extraterrestrial, global, and political agenda. Click the like button and subscribe to this channel. And now, here's Dr. Michael Sala.
Well, it's my great pleasure to have Mary Beaver with us on Exopolitics Today. Welcome, Mary, to the show.
Thank you.
Well, Mary, I know you've done a few interviews, and for those that don't know anything about you, you served in the US Army for 8 years, and you specialized in linguistics and had a talent for the Phoenician language. And you also got to see and experience some really interesting things concerning the Phoenician language, concerning giants. And all of this is what heightened it was the fact that at the end of your service, you were ghosted. So first of all, let's begin with you as a child when you actually had these special abilities concerning the Phoenician language. So you want to talk about that?
Yeah, we can talk about that. So when everybody's born into the world, we usually go through preschools and stuff like that. And school teachers or anybody that volunteers, whether they know it or not, are designed to find out information regarding that person's soul and what they're doing here. Because we all have a mission, right? We know this, but a lot of times we don't remember what the mission is because they end up wiping half your memories. So the valuable age is through 4 when they give you the first mind sweep. So during that time, they'll tell parents it's your imagination. Your child has a wide imagination, but we can see the different dimensions. We can see the beings in the different dimensions, the ones that are invisible. And we can communicate and we talk about our missions that we're supposed to do here. And when I was growing up, I said I was here to fight God's war. And so I came in with explicit information. My drawings were had a lot of detail with languages. People identified that it was just scribbles. And so I was put in counseling. There was a lot of abuse, but I was part of the SSP, and SSP are physically abused in order to become soldiers. And if you survive the abuse, because it can be pretty horrific, then you graduated into being used into those programs. So between the ages 4 and 7, my grandmother was my handler, and she allowed these beings, but she looked human, but you could tell that they weren't if you had the ability to see past, you know, the 5-second mask or the illusion of their appearance. And they would take us to the deep space programs. I was genetically altered with different things. And it goes by your gene code. So they give you different sequences of injections, shock therapy, waves. They put you in chambers. There's a lot of different things that they've done to us that a lot of us don't have the memory of it, but your body still has the memory of it. So when you go through something, and sometimes people are claustrophobic, it's because you were put into a simulator that was like shocking your body. So you have, your body has the trauma, but your mind is like, I don't know why I'm doing this. So I do remember my grandma volunteering us because she was part of it. She was an Eastern Star Mason. And my grandfather was a Mason. So I was raised by the Illuminati Masonics. And we were used off world, mostly to guard mineral planets, because that's huge, is the minerals. If you have any minerals, then they want to keep it. And you also have, what you do here is what you did there. Everybody gets taken. It's not just people who are in a super soldier program. They need accountants in there. They need, you know, laborers, slaves, guides, navigators. Everybody is taken. Whether you could be taken for 2 to 5 years. You can be on a 20 and back, 100 and back. Nobody actually knows the extent of how long you've been out there for, but everybody on the planet has been taken. go ahead.
So I just wanted to kind of identify the special role that you're grandmother and grandfather played in identifying you and recruiting you, because one of the things that you shared with me was that you have a connection to General Walter Beadle Smith. And there's the photo that you shared with me, your great uncle, that's Walter Beadle Smith on the left, and your grandmother and grandfather in there. So you want to explain who these people are?
Yeah, so my grandma was born a Smith, and that's her half-brother. And my grandfather was born a Jones. So I met my great-uncle when I went to D.C. But my grandmother, she did contract work with the Department of Defense. Mary Singer is one of her idolized heroes. She believes in the calling of the herd, if you will. And I was being raised to believe that's why we had to take humans out for a specific reason, because like they say now, they're useless eaters. And I was raised on a farm, so I kind of understood at the time why things needed to be culled. Because if you couldn't sell them and they were useless, they weren't breeders, you put them in the freezer, right? So that was the concept with why we had to eliminate uneducated beings and or humans. And she was part of the elimination of the Native Americans in Oklahoma, And when I asked her, I was like, well, Grandma, aren't you Native American? She's like, well, I didn't know at the time. But we found out we're not Native American. We were just raised on the farms or the territories out there. So
I just wanted to kind of like emphasize this, that gentleman on the left there, that's the former General Walter Beadle Smith, who was President Eisenhower's deputy during the Second World War. And he got to 4-star rank, but he was also a CIA director from 1951, I believe, up until 1953. Maybe. He was the CIA director. So here you have the former CIA director and assistant to President Eisenhower, who himself has a long pedigree in terms of extraterrestrial projects, with the two very people that you say kind of like identified you as someone of special abilities that they thought could be recruited. So, you know, this is important documentation.
Well, supporting the one in the middle is his wife. My grandma's not in that picture, yeah.
Okay. The man on the right is your grandfather.
My grandfather, yes.
Okay. So he's the Jones.
Yes. And the Smith. Okay. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that's very helpful. Just to kind of see that kind of background that shows, because I found in doing this exopolitics research is that a lot of it is multi-generational. Yes. And typically you get parents or grandparents identifying children or grandchildren that have the abilities that could then be useful in those programs. So I think this really does support what you're saying, that you have that background. So very, very interesting. So you have this connection to the former CIA director, General Walter Beadle Smith. He's your great grand uncle, and your grandparents were related to him by marriage. And I guess one was, half related, right. And then you decide, well, at some point you decided to join the US Army and you served for 8 years. So you want to explain, you know, what happened during your teenage years and you actually enlisting in the Army? Well, why did you decide to join the Army?
I've always been different. I have Asperger's, and that was one of the things that was identified when I was younger. It's a higher form of intelligence. So, you know, when you have a diagnosis of mentally retarded, at the time, you're shunned upon. So I was hidden. A lot of people didn't know that I even existed. They thought my mom only had like 2 children instead of 3. And when they found out, they were like, oh. And I was picked on a lot. I had obviously red hair, and it was kind of like putting a black kid in the school in the 1920s. I was the only redhead, so I was beat up a lot, picked on. And finally, one day I turned around and I beat somebody up because he wouldn't leave me alone. And life was indifferent. So a lot of slave laboring on my side, we were worked very hard. And I always wanted to go into the military because structure seemed to be my thing. And being out in the world with people was hard because I was so different and people didn't understand me. So when September 11th hit, I was able to go into the military. Before that, I couldn't, because we have a joke in our family. We come from the land of the giants, because the tallest in our family is 7'4", and there's 2 of them. So... And my grandma's 6'1". The tallest aunt I have is 6'4". I'm pretty short for my family. And so I do know about the giants and what their part was here. But when I got into the military, I went in as a human intelligence analyst. And I was supposed to go to Fort Huachuca. And at the last minute after basic training, they gave me orders that I had to go to the Linguist Academy because there was an overflow of intel. So, and since I had put on my application, I could speak 2 Native American languages and write ancient Phoenician. They sent me down there as a way to, I guess, deter it. But I didn't realize my father went to Fort Huachuca. So I'm guessing somebody was there that knew him, and I would have asked a lot of questions, I think. So maybe that was their purpose of doing a last minute transfer. But while I was in LDAC, that was the program I was in, and a lot of people don't realize that's even a program down in the Linguist Academy, but it's for unknown languages. Like Africans have their as a native language for them, so it's not a world known language. So when I put Native American and Phoenician on my application, I went to that specific program, and they had to find Native Americans to come in, test me. And then when it was time to test me for the Phoenician, I got flown out to DC and taken to base 7, which was a couple layers underground, but nothing. I didn't see anything funny except for a green door. I did see an amazingly big green door, and there was 2 guards on either side. And my grand uncle told me never to go near those doors because I'll be shot if I don't have a specific patch on. And I've only seen that patch on one person, and he was a very high level Air Force, and it's a little patch. It has a green door on it. It says behind the green door. So I was like, wow, what's behind the green door? And my uncle told me, he was like, things that would blow your mind. So I just took it as maybe there was nuclear weapons back there or something. But later it was revealed that's where they keep the secrets of the extraterrestrials. And I kind of had a feeling about them, but I didn't take it as truth until I got to see some videos and stuff of interrogations of a lot of different aliens, not just the grays that you see floating out right now, but there was blue aliens. There were a lot of different really pale white aliens, bald. Some had like things coming off their head. I don't know what you would call those, maybe like feathers, but not feathers. So I got to see quite a few things after I got a Majestic and a cosmic clearance, but never physically seen it.
That's fascinating. So your knowledge of 2 Native American languages and Phoenician, I mean, was that something that you just had, just that you remembered it, you could speak it, or you could recognize the language, or did you do anything to familiarize yourself with any of that?
The Native American language was inspired by the World War II Apaches. And I figured if I was ever going to be in a field and overseas in a war, I wanted to be able to, I guess, send messages back to our country in the event of capturing without them being infiltrated. Because I also took, I was in the beginning, this special skills program. So through Joint Special Operations. So I trained with the, in 2006, they merged, let's put it this way. They merged human intel, psych intel, and cyber intel. So I was human intel, and we got to train with the other two, not mastered those, but we got a little bit. So I know a little bit of cyber intel. So I got to see how they infiltrated messages from different areas. So I never wanted my messages to be infiltrated. And if they did, I didn't want anybody to be able to read them or decipher them. But if I was able to get messages back to our homeland in the event that I was ever deployed, then they would be able to decipher it because they could go to the reservations and say, hey, what is this? But I also wrote them in Phoenician, and not many people know Phoenician. I was told there was only 6 or 8 of us, but I didn't realize that they don't know the ancient Phoenician, because I just recently found out ancient Phoenician is different than the Paleo Phoenician, which is what they have. So when I got tested, the Pope came out. I didn't get to meet the Pope, but I went into one of the underground base 7. There was a big chamber, had all these scrolls and books. And, you know, you go in and look at old newspapers. I don't remember what those are called, but you get to see old newspaper clippings, and they had them all scanned in. And I was trying to decipher it. I was like, I don't know what this says. And the general was like, well, you put it on your application that you could transcribe this. And I was like, this is Phoenician, but I don't know what it says. It's not the Phoenician I know. And he got frustrated, and he was like, well, keep working. And he came back a few hours later and said they were going to do an extended stay with me in DC, that they had to bring out different scrolls. So these were more of the biblical kind of ones you would see with Christ and stuff like that. So I got to learn more about what happened there. And I learned that day that there's different types of Phoenician. So the stuff that you guys see on online and stuff, that's Paleo and Hebrew, or which would be considered Anunnaki Phoenician. The Phoenician I know is a lot older than that. It's 75,000 years old. And then I was just recently introduced to an older version that was about 120,000 years old. So Phoenicians considered the first language of human beings on the planet. So if you can find that timeline, that's where the djinn kind of come in. So, but yeah, the military part, they found that it was extremely valuable. And that's why I wanted to speak the different languages, but I wanted unknown languages in the event of us ever captured, that I could give locations without them being infiltrated.
Well, I know that's very important in the covert world to have people skilled in communications, whether it's in ancient languages or telepathy, to have these people being part of the project. So you spent 8 years total in the US Army, and during that time you got to serve in some very interesting places. You mentioned Base 7, and you saw extraterrestrials there. And this is in the Washington, D.C. area, so...
It's outside of it, so Washington, D.C. is considered Base 1. So they have an underground base under the Capitol Hill, so it's like headquarters. They probably moved it a few times, but Area 51 used to be considered headquarters until Eisenhower put in a proclamation that they had to be... viewed every year and inspected. So now it's what they call inspection ready. And a lot of the bad stuff doesn't happen there anymore. It normally happens in Area 54, which is down by San Francisco, LA area.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, so you got to do some work with different groups within the military. Now, you mentioned to me that you actually got to do some work with the Delta Force. So exactly what did you do with them?
One of my MOSs was a 00 Delta, which are considered assassins. So I was an assassin, but not like people think. It's kind of like when you go in and you want to be an interrogator, you discover there's like 100 different titles to interrogations. And because that was what I wanted to be, was a linguist interrogator. But I didn't get to, you know, rough anybody up like they do. That's an officer's position, and they didn't, your recruiter never told us that. So I was a little disappointed. So with the 00 Delta, it's kind of like the movie 007. They just changed the number to, or the letter to the number. And a lot of times you're just running in, getting information. You're sneaky about it. And you're a soldier of one, pretty much is what the logo was. And I'm not going to confirm or deny that anybody got hurt, but, you know, it's a nasty place. I had to get stuff back to headquarters, and I can remove obstacles pretty quickly. And I never checked to make sure that they were alive or not, because the point is to get out with what you can, because that could be what saves the country, or so we thought.
Well, you did send me some photos and documents, a newspaper story here, about your grandfather, and yes, also of your father and you, like three generations of you in the I guess the US Army. So you want to tell us about these three, well, you know, you being one, and then your father and grandfather. You want to tell us about that?
Yes. So my grandfather, Andrew Vernon, or Vernon Andrews, I'm sorry. He was obviously in World War II, and this article had come out because he had been shot, and his whole platoon, from my understanding, because I don't really talk much to the other side of the family, but the story that I got based off this article, and then I did some research while I was in the military. He infiltrated one of Hitler's stronghold generals and bases, and he was just a sergeant. Well, his lead sergeant had been shot and killed, and him and I believe six other men, they said there might have been a couple of others, but they may not have made it at the end, out of a whole 160 or 30 soldiers infiltrating this base. Once they secured it, it was what they was in the base. That was fascinating, but they don't talk about it, obviously, in this article. But that's where our whole family on that side, I guess, became part of the Majestic Group. in the Masonic part of the Andrews was because they came across the spaceships that they were reverse engineering. And my grandfather was able to, I guess, see those. And a lot of the stuff that they did with aliens, it wasn't just humans they were obviously cutting open and experimenting on. But they had contacts with aliens, and they had come across some Dracos that they were able to shoot away, but they fled, from my understanding. And then my grandfather, or my father, worked in Area 51, and he worked on the train down there from Base 51 to Alaska. And I'm the only one that was able to obtain a copy of his DD-214, but that does not have that information in there. It's one that's been obviously edited. And, but from the stories that I was given from my mom, and his engineering mind was just, he would talk about the train that was about a foot off the ground. It didn't touch it, and it would just fly through the underground bases. Like at light speed, but you wouldn't be affected by the speed of it. So whatever he saw down there, after the few years, I don't know if he was introduced to the Draconians or not, but he started building an army against, my father did, an army against the government. And he was successful at stealing five to six truckloads of military weapons off of a military depot. He was caught with one, so he spent prison time for that.
Mm-hmm. And of course, that person at the bottom left in that photo is you. That's,
yes,
bottom left. That's you. In so when was that taken? Was that soon after you completed basic training, or when was that photo taken?
I did basic training in 2001. That picture was taken when we just switched over from the camos to the digitals. So we didn't have any of our shamrocks or anything yet. That was the day we had to wear our digital. So I didn't have any of my pins and stuff on there, but I believe that was 2006 or 2007.
Okay.
But yeah. So I didn't normally take pictures, because back then we weren't allowed to wear makeup, and I don't like taking photos without makeup because I have transparent ivory eyes, and people think I look sick if I don't have makeup on. So
now I just want to clarify, in this story here, this is talking about one of your grandfathers, Vernon Andrews. Correct. And the other grandfather was the Jones.
William Jones, yes.
That we talked about in the earlier photo, who was seated next to his, brother-in-law.
Yeah.
General Bettles Smith. Okay, so both of your grandfathers essentially were connected to all of this. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I know you sent me also another document, which I think is very helpful, because it just kind of like goes to prove what it is that you're saying is actually accurate. Here's a document you sent me of your father's military service.
Yes.
Right. So there we go. So that's Stephen Andrews.
Correct.
Okay. So and it's very interesting. You want to explain why it was that they restricted some of this information from you?
Well, actually, the whole thing was restricted from anybody getting a copy. I was just fortunate enough, because I was in and I had to get a particular security clearance. So my unit sergeant had to go and request it. So that's the only reason I got a restricted copy, but nobody else in our family can get one. It's kind of like the same with mine is, he was under the Privacy Act, but we weren't. The laws changed when we went into Joint Special Operations. I was getting a crypto level 14 gold need to know majestic and cosmic clearance. And they even, if I could find the document, but I also had to get a copy of my name change, because I was born Andrews. Mary Margaret Andrews. And in 1991, a federal judge secretly changed it to Mary Margaret Jones. And nobody in my family knew. I didn't even know. We just went by Jones because my mom was getting a divorce from my dad. And because of his, whatever he saw down in Area 51, it freaked him out. So he was dangerous. And he had kidnapped at one point my brother and I during a visitation. We were recovered, obviously, but he was one of the ones that tried to kill me because he said that I was an abomination out of Area 51. And so, yeah, it was interesting growing up.
Well, I just wanted to read out for the viewers one of the sentences in this official document you got from the National Archives. And the second sentence says, well, thank you for contacting the National Personnel Records Center. We are providing the releasable military service information based on restrictions imposed by the military services consistent with the Department of Defense regulations and the provisions of the Freedom of Information Act. So it is saying that when it comes to your father's records, there are restrictions imposed on that, which is not the norm. That right. says that, well, he was involved in some pretty kind of sensitive stuff, which is exactly what you're saying.
Right. So I was kind of shocked to see that too. But on the actual DD-214, it doesn't show anything. It you could see that it's been typed out differently as an edited one. It's kind of like your birth certificate. You have a short version of your birth certificate and then you have a long version. The long version is the one that they don't tell you about. That has more detailed information like what your race is, who the doctor, the nurses, everybody that was involved in your birth on it. And the short version just says where you were born, who your parents are, and that's it. So with the military, these ones are the short version. And then you have the long version, which would be the one that obviously we want to get a hold of, but because it would show what he did. But he's supposedly guarding the missiles in Alaska. But again, the stories I got were a little different than guarding missiles. He might have been guarding the portal up there so that the missiles were aiming at, but I don't know.
Okay, so your father's involved in very sensitive stuff and his military mm-hmm. records are restricted even to family members. Again, very, very unusual. Now, in your case, you served 8 years in the Army, so you got to spend time in very sensitive projects. You want to talk about the time you spent at Area 51? I think you saw some things there. This is during your service, your military service, right? You're at Area 51 or S4.
No, those were before. Those are during the SSP programs. Okay. We're in a couple of different bases. The ones, and I believe it was Area 51, but again, it could have been 53 or 54. But at the one of the underground chambers is extremely huge. And there's two pillars, like kind of like the one that is in Washington, D.C., the big, tall monument. Those aren't monuments. Those are energy beacons. So the one down below, and it was huge. In the background, you had these stairs that climbed up on the back of the flat mountain, and there was a door. And up there was either some type of high-level officer who stood over us, but it was myself and one other being. He almost looked like Powder from the movie, really white, no hair. He was like in white robes. And then myself on another one. And these towers were very spaced apart, they were huge. And on the other one had Samaritan language on it. And then the one I was at had Phoenician language on it. So they would use us to open this portal. And it's a huge portal or a gateway, whatever you want to call it. And we'd have to put our hand on our heart and then the other hand here, and we could activate this tower. But we would black out as soon as the portal opened, but we could see the material that it was made out of. It was kind of neat, but then we black out, so we couldn't see what was coming in and out of that portal. And then a lot of those memories were erased. So, but those were one of my underground experiences. And the other one, I did get to see a giant. He was massive. He was kind of a light blue, white hair, and like kind of, I would say they were green, hazel, but blue at the same time, eye color, but he wasn't moving. He was just laying on the ground. And there was this reversed Tesla technology cage over him. It was just hovering over him. I mean, he wasn't moving, but you could see, I guess, his essence. They were drawing out his essence, his life, and whatever, instead of enhancing it. They were reverse engineering his soul away, or whatever giants have. And they told us, but it was very sad to see that, because obviously that one's not here anymore. But I got to see one of those, and it was devastating. But yeah, you can't get close to those particular type of angels, because you'll explode.
So tell us, how tall was this giant?
I don't even know, because he's laying down. I would say at least 20, 30 feet.
Wow, that's quite tall. And yeah. I mean, was he thin? Was he robust?
No, very thin, very thin. Looked almost to the point of starvation. But again, I don't know how long he had been in that chamber. There was no chains or any restrictions on him. I don't know if they kept him drugged or what they did, but you could just see the light kind of energy coming, sucking out of him like water waves into this Tesla machine.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know what they're doing, but they sit there and they tell you these guys are evil and they're trying to kill you. But when they're laying there looking at you lifeless, it's like, is that really what I would too? I mean, if somebody was trying to kill you, wouldn't you want to try to kill them back? I mean, isn't that called self-defense? So
well, that's fascinating. That case with the giant. So his life force was being drained out of him. So they were intending to kill him.
Right.
But you know, this was some kind of experiment as well, seeing how well their technology used on these beings.
Right. And I'm pretty sure they're using it on us, to be honest
okay.
with you.
Okay. Well, tell us about it. I mean, how were they using that technology on you or other? Because you were a child at this time. This is before your army service.
Right. Yeah. And they age progress us. Yeah. So how they would do it, I don't know if you've ever been in a plane. If you look down at the structure of cities and stuff, it looks like, what do you call those? Well, like your keyboard, you take that, the wiring mechanisms out, and it's got these different structures on it. So that's what cities are, is they're strategically placed in certain areas as an energy frequency. So your house is literally your matrix chamber. And if you have any kind of plugs or energy, if you pay an energy bill, they're literally retracting energy from you. And now that they have the smart iRobots, they can time when you're sleeping, when you're not. That's why they say don't sleep with your cell phone next to you, because those ones draw energy as well. And they kick on because they know your pattern. I've never been a pattern person. And my grandfather, he used to run moonshine back in the day with his father and brothers. So they never took the same path twice in the same day. So nobody could catch up to them. So I kind of picked up the same concept. And even in my own house, I don't have a strict pattern. Everyone's like, you're just so unpredictable. And I was like, right. So nobody could catch me. Why would you want people to be able to know your patterns? So, but yeah, your home, anything that has electricity it takes your energy, and it knows who it's taking it from, because we have energy signatures. Which is our soul, obviously, and they keep track of our souls. So they know who they can take it from and who they can't. And that's why we're so tired and children are so amped up, because children embrace our energy. We naturally get energy from each other. But when we're so tired and exhausted, because children are giving us their energy because they want to play. And then they're taking it because we're enhanced by our children, if that makes sense.
Okay. You mentioned that you were age progressed. So when did that happen?
Between 4 and 7 is I've been on 5 progressions and regressions.
So you want to explain what happened during one of these age progressions and regressions?
Yeah, they take us through. So as a child, you know, obviously my grandma took us, or allowed them to take us. And We were taken to the underground bases, and it's kind of like Disneyland. There's doors. Those are usually the sorting chambers, but these doors you go through. So I was in MK Delta, and so I'd go back through that door, and they'd bring us into what looked like a big room area. It's all white, lots of just regular chairs, no tables. And then we would go into these pods, and they would zap us with age progression. So we would come out as an adult of a certain age. Men can usually only do it once or twice. A third jump would start to deteriorate their body because men can't naturally heal themselves. But I found out how they were, women were being able to age progress more than them. They take our future children as like energy collateral. So a lot of the miscarriages we have are pre-planned because they know their whole future outlook, because they can look through the looking glass.
So they age progressed you at that period between 4 and 7 to whatever age that they wanted. And mm-hmm. So then you got to serve how long in the covert programs?
There's no set. A lot of people think it's just the 20 and backs, but you could be out there for 100 years. They have the med bed technology and all of it. And technically, we're supposed to live about 1,000 years. So when you come back and you're like 20 years old and you feel like you're 80, it's because your body has physically been used for that amount of time. So technically, I could be 120,000 years old. I could be 2,000 years old. But nobody knows unless you have access to those records.
Okay, so now one of the things that's others who have been part of these secret space programs and gone through the age progression process described, that seems to be two ways that it happens. The one is that you've explained it, that the physical body as a youngster is actually age progressed to whatever mm-hmm. age, and then you get to serve, and then they age regress you, bring you back, and then they can do it all over again a number of times. I guess you're saying men can do it up to a maximum of 3 times, but women can do it maybe 4 or 5 times before right. there's some sort of cellular DNA degradation. And the other way that's others have talked about is that your consciousness is transferred into a clone body, and that the clone lives and does all these things. And then when the clone is done, or it comes back and either goes into the original body or it goes into another clone, and off you go doing it again. So
right. I've heard of those. I do have clones, but I've always been used in my body. The military did take DNA from me several times, but every month for the 8 years. And I was told I had clones, but I've never seen them. When I went in my physical body. But yes, I do know about the clones. A lot of people do talk about the clones. So I was not a clone, one that would leave my soul body. So,
but the clone was there as a backup in case, for example, you get killed on a mission, somehow they would be able to transfer your consciousness from the dying body or the dead body into the clone. I mean, is that the way it works?
I think so. Yeah. I don't have memory of the clones. I have memory of some of them being used like right now for this war, but those are only in dreams. So I don't know how they would astro project your soul into one. I just know there has to be an essence of your soul in the clone to activate it, but it's not as strong as the original. So I think that a lot of these clones were confiscated by the White Hats and are being used or have been used in the last war for the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't know how many clones I had. Some people do, but I never did. I just knew I had them.
Okay, so you would serve for whatever it was, 20 years, and then they would age regress you back? So when they did it for the final time, they aged you, guessed you back to, 4, 7 years, whatever age you were, the final time, because you said you did several.
Right. They take you back to the day you left. Yeah.
So they took you back to the day you left. So what did you remember of your, at that time as a 4-year-old, 5-year-old? What did you remember?
Well, when they sent us back, me, I know my experience. I don't know other people, but they would inject you with a different upgrade, if you will. So a lot of the they would obviously you're out there for a long time. So when you come back, they'd have to upgrade you for the next one, but they can't. Your SSP would fight you if you were doing something so that it didn't like, because it's that consciousness that it just comes out when it has to defend itself. So they would inject us or me and then send us back, and then we would be like the terrible twos or the terrible fours. It would be a fight. Now, when they sent me back to 5.5 years old was when they injected me with a Jaguar mutation. And that's where I was diagnosed mentally retarded and with severe ADHD. Was the SSP can't come out in a child because it's an adult, right? So when you're put back into a child form, it's just really bad behaviors. Like I lost, couldn't talk, was nonverbal. I fought everybody. I would run away and come back. And it was intense because I was fighting myself. But it was really fighting this mutation upgrade that they put on us. And then when they would take us again in a year or two, we would be, the mutation would have taken over the cells, and it would have had, it enhances the SSP part of you to do the missions. So they never just sent you back. They would always upgrade you. The only time they sent you back was when your last jump. So then they didn't mutate you with anything.
So if I understand it correctly, then so between the ages of 4 to 7, they would age progress you, age regress you, bring you back, you're 4.5, and then maybe when you're 5, they do it again, take you off, bring you back, and maybe when you're 6, they do it again. Well, so that's fascinating. So you thought they did it to you like up to 5 times in that 3-year period? I mean, that's a lot, but it would be a lot for anyone to process.
The gentleman that's deprogramming me from the space program, I can't give his name out because he still works down there, but he started deprogramming me in 2019. And that was an interesting fight, because when he would call, he was trying to find my deprogramming words, because we all have them. And I would get angry because I didn't know who he was. It was a DC number. And I'm like, who are you? I don't want you people, leave me alone. And finally he did get it. And it's like, I froze. Like, I was like, oh my God, okay, I have to listen to this guy. So he said who he was, and he said he had to start deprogramming me. So he told me a lot. And then I had a brain aneurysm, and this was in, the brain aneurysm happened a week or two before my birthday in June, 2019. And that's an overload of information, because I was downloading too much. So we have kill switches in our brains. And if we end up figuring things out too quickly, that's the government's way of not having to send somebody. They just try to kill you internally. And I was able to survive the brain aneurysm without any damage. But I'm also a biotechnical civilian scientist. So while it was occurring, I didn't realize what it was. I injected myself with some white cells and was able to drive myself to the hospital. And then all this, my memory just started flooding in. But I do talk to this individual on occasion, and he'll give me more information. And sometimes he's the one that shocked me the most is he said I could start going on and talking to you guys about some of this stuff. And I was like, well, what happens if they come after me? And he's like, ah, you know what to do. And I'm like, I don't want to fight anymore. I'm done. So, but the last operative they sent after me was in 2019 as well. But he was good. He got close. The only one that ever got that close to me. So, and it's actually fell spilled over into the civilian world. So it's a 37-minute 911 phone call that was recorded, and the entire sheriff's department was up there, and two veterans fighting it out. So, and he just was all blacked out and just kept repeating, "I'm gonna kill you. I'm gonna rid the world of you." It was very esoteric, and I'm laughing at him like, dude, we need to get you some help.
Yeah, very, very frightening. Yeah. So so you went through the SSPs in that period as a youngster. You're diagnosed with Asperger's, which I guess is considered a disability in some ways, but in other ways it kind of heightens your abilities. So I guess that maybe it heighten your ability to be able to recognize and read ancient languages such as Phoenician?
I was actually born with it, not from this time. And I know that sounds weird. I was created in the time of Christ, whatever real era that was. And King Herod was killing off all the apostles. And the aliens are not allowed to interfere with timelines, already active timelines. And I don't know when this project started, but I do know that they go back, or they did, I don't know if they still do, they go back into the past and they take unborn fetuses from parents who are going to die. So my mother was actually killed by the, what do they call them? The Knights Templar, 7 of them. And I was able to see it as I was pulled out, and the whole uterine and the sac and the fluid. And then we hyper jumped. And then I was in Area 51. That was one of my oldest experiences. So I just know that the King Herod did a deal with the aliens to wipe out the apostles and the Christ bloodline and anybody that had anything to do with it. So there were several unborn children, I think about 7 of us, who were brought to, I would say, this era. I don't know the exact timeline, if it was my year, but there's at least 7 of us that I know of.
So when you say you were part of that era of the apostles and the extraterrestrials were, I guess we're talking about a negative faction of extraterrestrials, right? We're not talking all extraterrestrials, we're talking a negative faction, right, of trying to eliminate the Christ bloodline, the Mary Magdalene bloodline, if you like. And you were kind of like a part of that. And you were, so after that, or some at some point, you were brought into this era and born in this era.
Yeah. And so my understanding of how the other ones were is they were put into the incubators. I think I was hidden. I don't know. I know that I wasn't put in the incubators. And then those ones were adopted into the Illuminati families. I was actually placed in my mother. And so there was no adoption record. I don't know if they made it seem like I died during the transfer or something. I just know that I've just been a huge secret for a very long time. But yeah, I was implanted into my mom. And that's why I think my father tried to kill me, because he said I was an abomination from Area 51. But we have to have a genetic make to the person we're put in. Obviously, you can't just throw it into anybody. We have to be genetically connected.
Mm-hmm. Now you've described Phoenician, something that you've recognized all your life and could read, yes, and write it, as the language of the gods. So you want to elaborate? You know, which gods are we talking about? Are we talking about a group of extraterrestrials? Are we talking about the Anunnaki? Who are you talking about, the language of the gods?
Well, there's a lot of gods. There's thousands of them. I come from the prime bloodlines. So if you really go back into the Phoenician, there was more than just the Anunnaki and the Paleos. Those three races, I would say, were more on Cain's bloodline, but the Anunnaki are not exactly the friendliest people that we think they are. They're the reason a lot of this world was infiltrated with the reptilians, the negative evil reptilians. And that's, I don't know if that'll ever come out, but it's written in the Phoenician bloodlines or the temples about who actually conquered this world and destroyed it. But so the prime, there's the primes. I mean, I don't know if they use that with the movie Transformers, but I do come from a prime bloodline. But there's thousands of gods. And it's whoever created us. Now, each territory has different creator gods. And I don't know if you watch some of James Rinks, he had a Dr. Johnny Delirious on there, and I went on with one of those with some of his tablets that they found in New Mexico. Well, those are creator tablets and keys. So they had sent them to me to see if I couldn't transcribe some of them. And some of them had an older version of the Phoenician. And there was a, I can't say that person's name, but he was a master. A very high level master who was given an even older tablet to protect him, and it had some older Phoenician on it. So we actually stem from the Phoenician realm of, I would say, creation here. I don't know exactly what gods were part of the Phoenician creation, but it was more of a pure bloodline of the creator god, his second wife. And the first wife is the one that created more of the good and evil imbalance, not intentionally, but when you're first creating life in a universe, you have to have the good and evil, right? The yin and the yang. So the second wife was more of balance and creation. And that's where Yahweh, Yeshua come in. They're more of the positive, not the negative. So that's my current understanding of the different things. If you look at a Christmas tree is actually what our universe looks like. Each spike of a Christmas tree, because when it starts off as the seed of life and it grows, it has one spike on it, and then three or four more come up. And then with each branch is a spike. That's what our galaxy, our universe looks like, is all these spikes, our planets, galaxies, and worlds, and some fall. Obviously, we have needles on the ground, right? They'll die and they'll fall, but it'll keep generating. So a Christmas tree is kind of like what our universe looks like. And at the very top is the creator of it.
I remember when you first got in touch with me, you shared some Phoenician script, and I showed it to my army source, JP, and he recognized it. He said he saw it. That Phoenician script that you sent me on one of the arcs in, I think it was the Atlantic arc that's right at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean there. So I don't know if you remember that, but you want to just explain what that script was that you sent?
It talks about the creation of life on the seventh day. There was, you know, light and man, and it's just the it's a biblical verse that has been translated into what we know today. But it has the arcs have to do with life. They're living, they have a soul, but they're an angelic soul. Each soul has an opportunity to be able to go into a vessel. We don't know what those vessels look like. It could be grass, it could be a tree, it could be an animal, it could be us. But souls can actually go into what we would think is machinery. So the arcs, as you and I had talked before, if they were the arcs described in the Bible, it wasn't a boat. It was a ship, like a real ship, spaceship, craft. And the ancients, which are still alive today, were the ones who master architected it. But it was the group of people, the Samaritans, you know, the ancient... what would you call the Hispanic, the Latin ones, the Africans, all those languages should be on some of these ships because they were the architects. So they would leave their blueprint, and it tells you who can activate or access these ships. Now, we all are part of the ancients somewhere down the line, but you can only have one captain. There's very few captains that can man the ships. Anybody can go on them, even the Illuminati, but you can't activate it. Only captains can activate it, what they would see as a captain. So it had to be a shared bloodline, somebody who was a certain percentage of the ancient DNA.
Well, I know that a group of Aztecs went into that arc in the Atlantic Ocean, and they recognized the writing on the wall. So, yeah, you're absolutely correct that these ancient cultures and their scripts, their languages are imprinted on the walls of these arcs, and there are many arcs dispersed around the planet. And I assume there's probably one that the Aztecs were involved in, some ancient Aztec civilization, and then you have the Sumerians and the Phoenicians. So, yeah, very, very important.
And there's about 75.
Sorry, how many?
There's about 75.
75 arcs on the earth?
Yeah.
That you know of, that you were told? How do you know that?
It's more of a feeling from the mother one. And that the biggest one should be between Pacific and Russia. The biggest one is out there. There's more out there, but in the land, like in Southern America, there's quite a few down there in the jungles and stuff. If they start rising, they're going to start seeing it. The trees and dirt and stuff are obviously going to fall off. They're going to be like floating cities. But yeah, when they settled down, life created around it to cover it up. But yeah, from my understanding and feeling from the mothership was 75.
Well, I know there's quite a, it seems like there's a few people coming into that area that you're at, so maybe I should kind of try to wrap it up. I did want to just kind of like come back to your military service, that you served for 8 years, and obviously you've had a lot of amazing experiences. You had all of those secret space program experiences as a youngster. Your grandparents were involved, your parents, or your father was involved, and so there's a lot of mystery around your background, and even during your military service itself, when you were being taken to places to look at Venetians. So you applied to the National Archives for a record of your military records, and I thought it was very interesting what you sent me, that here you are, you've served in the U.S. Army for 8 years, and they sent you back. Oops, that's the wrong one. Let me bring up the other one. I think this is the one. Here we go. So there, here you have you applying for your military records, Mary Jones. That's what you enlisted under.
Correct.
Got your social security number there and all of that. And it says, thank you for contacting the National Personal Records Center. A search of our registry in the electronic records system maintained by the Military Service Department using the name and social security number which you provided was negative. So how can that be? What's happening here that you're applying for your military service? We saw you in uniform. You remember being in the Army for 8 years. Why aren't they sending you your records?
Because I was ghosted. I was arrested in a civilian setting over in Georgia. I was incarcerated for 108 days, and they said that they tried to put felony charges of my name not being Mary Jones. And I'm like, I had all my military records, the reason why I was there, my CAT card, my Capitol Hill pass, all my clearances, my license, birth certificate. I gave it all to them. And what it was, the reason the military did that was because I was sent after somebody who was going to go public with some information, and they said that he was a rogue and a spy. And you know, you can't say that to a soldier, because you know, we're going to go after somebody who's trying to tear down our country. Well, he was like the third one that we had to get information from, and when I found him and I approached him, he said something to me, and I don't know if maybe that was where I first started like really deprogramming. He said, "I'm not your enemy." And I was like, "Well, why don't we go back and, you know, talk this out?" Like, I had my script, you know, it just like flowed out of my mouth, like, "Let's go talk it out. We'll find out what you are, you know, and what you're doing with the sensitive information." And he was, some other words were exchanged, and he was like, "Well, you know, I'm not going." And I was like, "Well, then you know how this ends." And obviously, I'm still here. So, there was information in that packet, and I don't normally open packets, but I did at that time. I had this like really strong pulling to see what this guy was trying to go public with, and it was the demise of America pretty much, and how they were going to do it, and step by step. And I was pervious to some of the documents, but they didn't make it sound so horrible than what this guy had. And I was like, wow, this was heavy stuff. I don't want to say it because they'll probably take this video down if I did. So I started questioning everything to the general and other people. And so I was arrested by Hughes's men. And Hughes's men are worse than Blackwater. Blackwater are usually veterans, but Hughes's men, I think, are serial killers. And they'll pull a baby out of somebody and strangle a mom with a vocal cord. Or umbilical cord. So they're very evil people with no souls or nothing. So I was captured by them.
Can you say that name again? Hughes's? I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, Hughes's group.
Oh, the Hughes's group. Okay.
Right. It's a secret military or government, whatever, assassins. I have no idea what they are, but they're not friendly at all. And you can identify them pretty quickly. But Blackwater, everybody knows about Blackwater. So there's a few divisions like that. But at that time with me, the Hughes's group was directly under the CIA's use and everything else. So I was interrogated and arrested a few times. And I told them I had a kill switch and they should just get it over with. And I wish I could survive to see the look on their face when everything's exposed. So my uncle was called in at that point. He asked me if I had that kill switch. And I was like, well, I'll tell you what, if I walk out of here, you guys aren't willing to mess with that, are you? I didn't walk out. I was actually gurneyed out because I was pretty messed up. And I was in the rest in the hospital for quite a while to recover from those damages. So they couldn't kill me because I had this kill switch that they didn't want to find out if I was actually being truthful or not. And it has, there's signatures of very high level people, confessions, pretty much everything that I ever did was in these packets that got sent to 5 different countries all over the world who are not friendly to America anyways. So they needed to get rid of me. And the only way you can get rid of somebody else was, I guess, to ghost them. So there's a few of us. I've met quite a few ghosts. To my recollection, what I Googled, there's 183,000 of us. And I Googled that like 8 years ago. So there's probably more.
Well, Mary, really amazing information that you've been able to share, and those documents that you sent me definitely support your story. So definitely, I look forward to hearing more. And if you get more documents, if more material comes out, I would love to hear more. So where do people go if they want to if get in touch with you or they want to learn more about you?
My current email address, the one that you have, would be a good one to reach out to right now. There's going to be a lot of changes coming. Hopefully, maybe I can share later, but right now it's pretty high up there that I can't really talk about. We've already lost somebody over it, so...
Well, I definitely have more questions for you, but I think that might have to wait for another time, or maybe we don't have so many kind of external interferences. So
I apologize. But I had my other headset. I couldn't find it. So I took my kids' gaming set, and I'm like, does it work? And I'm like, does it cancel out noise? And they're just like, I don't know. I'm like, darn it. So again, I apologize. Wasn't expecting the internet to go out.
Well, thank you for coming forward and having the courage to share your information and being part of this incredible transformation we're witnessing all over the planet, an awakening.
Yes, thank you, I'm excited. I'm glad that it's happening. It's overdue. I didn't think it was going to go down this route, but I see the positives in it now. So it's still something worth fighting for, even though it seems like we're still getting into the down and dirty of it all. But yeah, thank you for allowing me to come on your show.
You have been listening to Exopolitics Today with Dr. Michael Sala. Please remember to like, share, and subscribe to this channel. Join or start a conversation in the comments. Take the time to explore the vast library of best-selling books, webinars, and podcasts by Dr. Sala. Visit exopoliticstoday.com.